The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're jumping into an event from, almost 1,000 years ago that really still defines a major world power. We're talking about the Norman conquest of 1066.
We are. But we're not just, you know, retelling the story. We're using the amazing analysis of historian George Garnett to do what you could almost call an institutional autopsy.
An autopsy. I like that. Huh? So our mission today is to look past the Battle of Hastings, past the arrow in the eye, and really get into the process of this revolution.
Right. And Garnett asks a big question. How did a relatively small group of foreign invaders succeed in permanently subjugating and transforming one of Europe's wealthiest and most well-governed kingdoms?
Because that's the real trick, isn't it? We all know William the Conqueror won, but the deep dive here is understanding how he made that victory stick, how he turned an invasion into, a permanent structural change.
It's the operating system update that created the modern English state. And this matters for you, the listener, because Garnett argues this conquest laid the foundational architecture for so much that followed.
Like what specifically?
Its unique centralized power, its common law traditions, its whole geopolitical stance. It shifted England's focus away from Scandinavia and locked it into a relationship with continental Europe. You just can't understand the last millennium of English history without this.
Okay, so let's talk about the guide here. Who is George Garnett, and what makes his perspective so different from the usual Knights and Castles story?
Well, George Garnett is a very distinguished historian, a fellow in history at St. Hugh's College, Oxford. He's a specialist in the medieval period, but his focus isn't really military history.
Ah, so that's the key.
It is. He focuses on law, on land tenure, and political thought. So while other historians are on the battlefield, Garnett is, you know, deep in the archives.
He's looking at the paperwork.
Exactly. He's all about the legal and ideological frameworks that were put in place right after the fighting stopped. He analyzes the paper trail, the royal writs, the charters, all the legal pronouncements.
So he's showing how power wasn't just won with a sword.
It was solidified in the courtrooms. He's like a historical detective, showing how the Normans used the language of law and inheritance to justify what was, let's be honest, a massive, violent corporate takeover.
A hostile takeover, but one dressed up in legal robes. Okay, so that brings us to the core idea of the book.
Right. Garnett's whole thesis is built on this fascinating paradox. The conquest was achieved through a mix of continuity and catastrophic change.
Okay, that sounds contradictory. Let's break that down. What's the continuity part?
The continuity was William's public image. He very carefully presented himself as the legitimate, lawful heir to the previous king, Edward the Confessor. He kept saying, "I'm here to uphold English laws and institutions."
So he's not an invader. He's the rightful king coming to claim his throne and punish traitors.
Precisely. But that's the veneer. Underneath that claim, you get the catastrophic change.
Which was
the systematic, violent dispossession of pretty much the entire native English aristocracy. He replaced them with a foreign French-speaking elite. And he changed the entire system of land ownership to a feudal model based on military service.
So he used the idea of English law to carry out a totally un-English revolution.
Yes. You could call it a nationwide legal foreclosure, backed up by overwhelming force.
And the final piece of evidence, the big stamp on the whole project, was the Domesday Book in 1086.
That's the one. It was the final audit, the seal on this new political order. It was a conquest of institutions just as much as a conquest of armies.
Okay, so let's walk through that process. How did William actually manage to capture this highly sophisticated Anglo-Saxon state and turn it against its own people?
Well, you have to start with the crisis that made it all possible. Chapters 1 and 2 in Garnett's work cover the succession crisis.
Yeah.
The king, Edward the Confessor, was childless.
A power vacuum.
A huge one. You had multiple claimants. Harold Godwinson, the most powerful English earl, William of Normandy, and even the king of Norway, Harald Hardrada. It was a ticking time bomb.
And the events of 1066 are just wild. Harald has to fight off a Norwegian invasion in the north.
Which he does, a stunning victory at Stamford Bridge. But then he has to force march his exhausted army hundreds of miles south to face William, who had just landed.
And at Hastings, the tactics were just worlds apart.
Completely. The English had their famous shield wall, very tough, but static. William had a modern combined arms army, archers, infantry, and crucially heavy cavalry. And he used them brilliantly with feigned retreats to break the English line.
Once Harold fell, that was pretty much it for the military phase.
It was the end of the battle. But as Garnett makes so clear, it was just the beginning of the conquest. William's control was thin, and he spent the next few years putting down fierce rebellions.
Which leads us to the pacification part, and this is where it gets really brutal.
It does. The most shocking example is the harrying of the North in 1069.
What was that, exactly? Yeah.
Garnett sees it as a calculated strategy of terror, not just random rage. William's forces systematically destroyed crops, livestock, homes, everything. The goal was to make the region uninhabitable for a generation, to stamp out any possibility of future rebellion.
That's economic warfare, total annihilation.
It's chilling. But once the violence secured the territory, the administrative work began. And this is where that paradox of legitimacy really comes into play.
Right, the legal fiction. How did he pull that off?
By controlling the story. With the Pope's backing, he declared Harold a usurper. That meant that every single English landowner who had supported Harold, which is basically everyone, was legally a traitor.
Oh, wow.
And what's the punishment for treason?
Forfeiture of your land.
Exactly. So William wasn't seizing land by right of conquest, you see. He was legally confiscating it as punishment. He weaponized Anglo-Saxon law against the Anglo-Saxons.
That is brilliant and terrifying. But to manage all that confiscated land, he'd need a system.
And he found one ready-made. He captured the Anglo-Saxon administrative state. He kept the system of shires, the office of the sheriff, the royal writs. He just swapped out the personnel.
He fired the old managers and put his own people in.
He used English forms to execute a Norman substance.
Which brings us to the real revolution. Property. How land was owned.
Yes. Chapter 5 deals with this huge shift. The Anglo-Saxons had something called bickland, which was, in essence, outright ownership. You owned it. Full stop. William got rid of that. He declared that all land in England ultimately belonged to him, personally, as king.
And then he, what, leased it back to his followers?
Essentially, yes. He granted it back as fiefs or tenures, and these weren't gifts. They were held directly from him in exchange for military service and absolute loyalty.
So the price of being a landowner was now being a soldier for the king.
Precisely. It created this incredibly powerful centralized monarchy where everyone owed their position directly to the man at the top. And the church wasn't exempt either.
Right. It was a massive landowner.
So chapter 6 shows how William systematically replaced English bishops and abbots with loyal Normans. This brought the English church into line. But crucially, it also meant these new church leaders with all their land now owed the king feudal service too.
So every part of the power structure, secular and religious, now points directly to the king.
It all feeds back to him. Which brings us to the final reckoning, the Doomsday Book of 1086.
An audit.
The ultimate audit. It was an audacious project. He sent commissioners to every corner of the kingdom to record, under oath, who held what land and how much it was worth.
It's often seen as just a tax assessment, but Garnett says it's much more.
It's so much more. It was the definitive, legally unchallengeable record of the transfer of land. It recorded who the English owner was in 1066 and who the new Norman owner was in 1086.
So it's the receipt.
It's the final receipt for the Norman Revolution. It seals the dispossession in ink.
Wow. Okay, so stepping back from the details, what are the big core takeaways from Garnett's analysis, the kind of things that apply beyond 1066?
I think there are three really powerful ones. The first is that idea we keep coming back to. The paradox of revolution through continuity.
The idea that you succeed by capturing the existing government, not blowing it up.
Exactly. The Normans won because they co-opted the highly efficient Anglo-Saxon state, its taxes, its courts, instead of destroying it. It's, you know, a lesson that it's often more effective to repurpose existing systems than to start from scratch.
Like in a corporate merger, you don't reinvent the accounting department, you just take it over.
That's a perfect analogy. The second big theme is legitimacy as a weapon.
Right, the whole punishing traitors narrative.
Yes. William framed a violent seizure of property as a formal legal process. It just shows how vital it is to control the narrative, to use legal or moral justifications to legitimize huge disruptive shifts in power. You still see that today, all the time.
And the final takeaway.
The creation of hybrid institutions. The long-term result wasn't purely Norman or purely English. It was a new, fused, Anglo-Norman society, law, and culture. The pressures of governing forced them to combine the Norman military structure with the Anglo-Saxon local administration.
And the result was something stronger than either one was on its own.
A true synthesis.
Yeah.
It created a new, more sophisticated state.
You know, there are a few ideas from Garnett that just They really stick with you. They're so sharp.
They really are. They cut right to the heart of it.
Like the one on the Doomsday Book. The Doomsday Book of 1086 is less a map of England than it is a detailed ledger of a revolution.
Right.
That just perfectly captures the cold, bureaucratic finality of it all.
It does. It frames it as a legal document, a final declaration that the transfer of power is complete. Done.
And then there's this one about William's pragmatism. William's promise to uphold the laws of Edward the Confessor was not propaganda, but recognition of political reality.
Right. He wasn't doing it out of any love for English tradition. It was pure necessity. He saw a well-oiled machine and realized the smart move was to change the driver, not scrap the whole engine.
Which leads to the third one. The Norman conquest was achieved not by destroying the English state, but by capturing its highly efficient machinery. He didn't burn the government. He commandeered it.
And when you look at it through that administrative lens, you start to see all these real-life applications for how power works today.
So what should we be looking for? What's the practical insight here?
Well, first, the mechanics of a takeover. Garnett's work is a masterclass in this. In any hostile takeover, corporate or political, the initial win is just step one.
The real victory is in the follow-through.
Exactly. The lasting win comes from seizing control of the administrative and legal infrastructure. You have to capture the back office to make the change permanent.
The paperwork is where the real power is.
It really is. Second is about understanding legacy systems. The Normans didn't abolish the shire system. They just replaced the sheriffs. It shows that leveraging existing networks is often the smartest path to radical change.
Don't reinvent the wheel if it's already rolling where you want it to go.
You just need to be the one steering. And finally, there's the huge geopolitical shift. The conquest wrenched England away from its Scandinavian orbit and slammed it into continental Europe, setting the stage for centuries of conflict with France.
It set the country on a completely new trajectory.
A fixed long-term trajectory. It shows how one event can define a nation's path for a millennium.
What really stands out to me, what I keep coming back to, is that incredible contrast between the brutal, raw violence of the harrying of the North and the cold, bureaucratic precision of the Doomsday Book.
Brute force and paperwork.
Yes. William used terror to create the opening, but he used law and bureaucracy to lock it all down. It was a systems upgrade fueled by violence.
And that systematic transformation is the biggest lesson. This wasn't just a change of kings. It forged a new kind of centralized monarchy, a new legal tradition that we still live with. Garnett brilliantly shifts the story from the drama of the battlefield to the brutal strategy of institutional capture.
A revolution won in the back office. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.